It's the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Today's show is sponsored by Klondike Kate's Christmas Sleigh Bar. Enjoy Bud Light and Michelob Ultra Specials all football season at Klondike Kate's. So, Cole Hamels is now eligible to go to the Hall of Fame. One of my favorite Phillies writers is John Foley. He's got his own Substack. 2008 Phils with a Z is the Substack. You got to get a better website address, John, by the way. It's a little easier to find, a little easier to explain. But John was the one who convinced me with stats that Jimmy Rollins should be in the Hall of Fame. And when I saw his post about Cole Hamels, my first instinct was Cole Hamels is a good pitcher, but he's not a Hall of Famer. And after reading it, I have a different perspective. So we have John on to talk about it. Thank you, John. Appreciate you coming on.
Hey, what's going on? First time, long time, man.
Yeah, there you go. That's the way to start it. So why don't you give just some context about what are the requirements once you're eligible to get into the Hall for everyone who doesn't know?
Yeah, sure. So the voters are all members of the BBWAA, the Baseball Writers Union. And a player needs to hit votes on 75% of their ballots to be inducted. They get 10 years to reach that mark. If you're Ichiro or whoever, you hit that on your first try, no problem. But for most guys, the goal is to get to 5% in your first year or two. In your first year, stay on the ballot and then gradually make your way to 75%. Now, if you fall below 5% in any year, you're off the ballot, and then you have to wait on the veterans committees down the line, sort of like the way Dick Allen got in last year.
So for context, where are Utley and Rollins at this point, like just for context when we start talking about Hamels?
Yeah. For context, Utley is in good shape. Utley's in pretty good shape. He reached about 40% last year in his second year on the ballot, and that's probably the right trajectory to eventually hit 75 in the next 8 years. He's in good shape.
Yeah, baseball heads know. Yeah.
And what about Rollins?
And Rollins sadly is not on that same trajectory. He's at around 18% after 4 years, and he's probably not going to get there just because, you know, that surprises a lot of people because Rollins tops Utley in most of the traditional categories, counting stats and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly.
But Utley has the edge when it comes to the advanced stats, like WAR, and that's what's more trendy nowadays, right? So
yeah,
when you look at a path forward, Utley, he's at 40%. He's strong in the areas where voters are starting to look more. Rollins, I think years ago, he would have been almost automatic with his counting stats, but it's not the case nowadays, sadly.
So for Hamels, what I looked at initially, Hamels has 160 wins, 162. So my first blush was, well, that's not nearly enough, but I'm old. So given like where the baseball is now, can you give some context on the 162 wins and who will be going in maybe around the same time and what their win level is at?
Yeah, so admittedly, 162 really does not seem like enough, and it's the biggest flaw in Hamels' case. You look at any other metric, he fits right in with guys who are already in the Hall of Fame. Strikeouts, ERA, whip, all of that. As far as wins go, there's only two or three starters in the Hall with fewer wins. But the thing is, wins aren't what they used to be, right? Rotations used to be four guys, not five. They would all throw eight or nine innings and get a decision every time out. Cy Young had 511 wins. Walter Johnson had 417. It's crazy. Nowadays, five innings and you get pulled for your relief specialists. So voters are going to have to adjust. You're never going to see a 300-game winner again. So it's tough for Hamels to be sort of one of the earliest guys, you know, from an era where those win totals are not as impressive. To start making his way in.
I guess the big thing for me, John, would be if a pitcher or a player from the naked eye didn't dominate a certain era or his field, it would be hard for me to view them as a Hall of Famer. But I also look at it this way. You know, baseball has made it too hard to get in the Hall of Fame. Basketball has made it too easy to get in the Hall of Fame. How do we get to a middle ground where we appreciate these guys and put them in the Hall without disrespecting the guys that have come before, but still making the Hall of Fame the ultimate goal to achieve? Like, I don't want it to be easy to get in the Baseball Hall of Fame, but, I mean, there are guys I watched growing up playing that I'm like, he was one of the better players of his era, but he didn't have 500 home runs or 3,000 hits, so he's probably not getting in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, like that's exactly right. I mean, you don't want to water it down, but I do think there's a trend, especially among starting pitchers for the Baseball Hall of Fame, where, you know, you think Hall of Famer, you think the top guys in the Hall of Fame, right? The no doubters. Mm-hmm. You're thinking about Walter Johnson, and then you look at Cole Hamels and you say, he's no Walter Johnson. And well, no, he's not. But not everybody in the Hall of Fame is one of those top guys. And really, you know, there's, if you look at players in the Hall of Fame with over 200 games started, there's only 69 of them in the Hall of Fame in the history of the game, which I would argue is that we're setting too high of a bar. Mm. You know, that's a minuscule percentage of the guys that play baseball, where if you set the mark more around the top 3-4% of guys to play the game, then you do have the guys like Hamels. And, you know, reasonable people could disagree as to whether that's watering down what the Hall of Fame means. But, you know, at a certain point, if we don't adjust the standards here, you're not going to be putting in many pitchers at all.
Right.
Yeah. Well, so if I were to say, give me a couple of numbers that would surprise people that would make the case for Hamels. Make the case for Hamels.
Okay, so the best number I got is if you take all the pitchers, all the starting pitchers in the Hall of Fame already, all 69 of them, Hamels would be top five in strikeouts per nine, top five strikeout artists. And the only guys ahead of him, Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, Nolan Ryan, and Sandy Koufax. I mean, come on, look at those names.
That's a pretty crazy stat, you know, for a guy that started as many games as he did.
That's pretty good, right? And it's not like he's doing this in a small sample size. He had a 15-year career. And then the rest of the stats fit right in, usually among the top half of Hall of Famers, above the median Hall of Famer. Again, we think of these top guys. But if you look at the entire collection of starting pitchers in the Hall of Fame, and you take Hamels' ERA plus, his strikeouts, he's in the top half of them. He fits right in.
I was actually again, shocked how close his numbers are to King Felix. Mm. That was the comp that really blew me away, because King Felix did have the peak that Hamels didn't, mm-hmm. but overall career numbers, they're pretty close.
Yeah, it's almost spooky, right?
Yeah,
how similar they are. They're separated by like a handful of wins, 0.01 in ERA. Now, as you alluded to, they got there in different ways. King Felix had a sharper, shorter peak.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, he's got the ERA titles. He has a Cy Young, which Hamels doesn't. But in the end, if King Felix gets in, and he had a very strong showing for his first year, 20%. If he gets in, and then you look at their career numbers side by side, with Hernandez in, I feel like it's going to be pretty hard to keep Hamels out.
So,
and Hamels has the postseason success. He has the World Series MVP.
And LCS exactly. MVP too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this.
So what do you value more, the postseason success or the, you know, the ERA title?
He never said he wanted the season to be over and he couldn't wait to go home.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
that never happened.
Are you a Phillies fan? Yeah. What is going
on
right now?
Trying to put Hamels in the Hall of Fame.
He's not a Hall of Famer. What are we talking about?
It's Cole
Hamels.
The numbers are impressive.
Hey, take your little numbers and shovel. We have eye tests over here. What are we talking about? I love Cole.
He couldn't take it any longer.
No. Well,
no, I'm just kidding. I love Cole. But seriously.
John, if I were to ask you, if I were to give you a percentage, you give me a percentage chance. Cole Hamels ends up in the Hall of Fame. Not the Veterans Committee nonsense or any of that, but in normal voting, what do you think the percent chance Cole Hamels ends up in the Hall of Fame?
It's admittedly pretty low. I think he's probably got like a 30% shot right now.
Well, do the work.
But that's what I'm here.
Okay.
That's why I'm turning out my articles.
All right.
Yeah. Get that number higher.
It's all great. Right. You and Cindy Webster.
Yeah, trying to get Cole in the Hall of Fame.
In the Hall of Fame.
Well, he could. I'll tell you, John, you convinced me on J-Roll. I'm pretty staunch J-Roll deserves to be in there. But I'm also a traditional stats guy. You know, I'm 49 years old. And I thought the Hamels thing was great. So, you know, sometimes an athlete needs an advocate advocate.
Yeah.
You know, So keep at it, man. I thought you did a great job. Again, if you go to a Substack, it's 2008 Phils with a Z. John Foley, I'm sure you can just Google it as well. John, thanks for coming on, brother.
Appreciate it, John.
Hey, thanks, guys. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
I'm telling you, I read it and I was like, Cole Hamels. Now, Jack, to your point, I'm a big.
The eye test didn't say Hall of Fame.
The Hall of Fame should just be, what does your gut say?
Yeah.
Because all the dorks didn't want Jack Morris to get in.
Right.
And I was like, I watched Jack Morris. He's a Hall of Famer. I don't know what to tell you. So Hamels, my gut would say no. But when you say his numbers are the same as King Felix, and I think King Felix is a Hall of Famer.
He's a Hall of Fame talent.
I don't even know if King Felix is a Hall of Famer.
Like his five-year run.
How many Cy Youngs did he win?
One. And Cole never finished. He finished top five once, and it was fifth.
Right. That was probably in 17, right? Not 17.
07.
07.
It was. No, it was 11.
11.
The 1 year. Oh, right. Where 11. He won like 17 games.
I don't know, man. Maybe he's just good at writing and maybe I'm easily convinced, but I don't think I'm easily convinced.
I will admit, I never thought of Hamels as a Hall of Fame.
The strikeout.
Very good.
The strikeout per nine thing is crazy.
Yeah. That's good.
Often disrespected here.
Yes.
Just your tone with him lets me know.
It was awful.
Yeah, exactly. That was completely disrespectful.
I do like bringing up 09 because it's back to back World Series title. Great in 08.
It's great, no way.
Yeah, no. I mean, and then what doesn't get talked about is 2010. He was dominant in 2010.
Once they brought Roy and the guys here, he settled in.
Yeah, The year he's at 2.79 was the number four.
I would think about it this way: for a long time, I've had him in the same category as Nola. He's not in the same category as Nola.
Oh, way better than Nola.
Way better than Nola.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I don't know
about way better, but better.
Better than Nola.
Better stuff for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
The strikeout thing per nine, it was crazy to me.
Him being top five in that is wild.
Yes. Yeah. When you just include the pitchers that are already in the Hall of Fame.
Hamels never got the love. And see, this was my early transition from being the athlete to on radio.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand the whole the city didn't connect with him.
Right. You're like, California, the guy just was a World Series MVP.
What are we talking about? Yeah. The guy's a World Series MVP.
Yep.
But he never I don't think the fans ever loved him like that.
They're always ready to turn on him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a little unfair. Like, on any other team, he probably was an ace.
Yeah.
But then they went out and got Cliff Lee and Roy Halladay, who at that time were just
showed
better.
Us what a real ace.
Yeah. And that's my problem with Hamels. Like, I'm looking at, I was trying to really quick put together the best pitchers from the 2010s, right?
Yeah.
So he counts for 07, 08, 09, whatever, but mostly the 2010s.
Yeah.
He's not better than Kershaw, not better than Verlander, not better than Scherzer, not better than Chris Sale, not better than Madison Bumgarner. And then he starts getting into the Granky class. DeGrom is going to be a really interesting Hall of Fame case.
Well, yeah. DeGrom's like a better King Felix.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Well, he's actually like Koufax.
Yes, in terms of his numbers.
In very
in terms
short.
Of his numbers, yeah.
You barely even talked. I mean, what is this?
Shut up, man. Give me a break.
No, it's all good.
Yeah, no, it's not.
No, it is.
It's not
no,
good.
No, it's great.
No, it's
no,
not
it's
good.
Good.
All right.
No, I will see if he gets in.
All right. 215-592-9490. You stop, too. You both of you stop.
What?
Obviously,
I like that Utley's trending up.
Do show yourself. I'm just going to take a drink of water.
It's one of the better things that happens on this show that almost I see it coming and I can't do anything about it.
Yeah. It's sort of like, for me, it's like when you start slipping on ice and you know you're going to fall down and there's nothing you can do about
right.
it. Because I got to talk. It's a talk show, you know. All right.
The fun part is seeing you try to fight through it.
Yes.
Yeah, that's so,
and then
you know.
Jack.
Yes.
Jack's always going to have a response. It takes me down a notch, it does, which I need every once in a while.
You do?
Yep. All right. Major
you compared QB1 to Ben Simmons yesterday.
I did.
Yeah, that's what you
that
get.
That was...
And you know what? I believe it even more today. We have the... Okay. All right. We're going to start here. All right. We're going to do this. So... I see the 4 second conversation between Devontae and Jalen. And then everybody turns into, oh, but I was told. And you know what that reminded me of? Every time Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons would high five each other, I would get, oh, you say they hate each other. They did. All right. We're talking about Sirianni today. Has this season shaken your faith in Nick Sirianni as a head coach? And our next question today, because it is Brendan Fraser's birthday, give us somebody who was big in the 90s. 215-592-9494.
Great decade.
Great decade.
Great decade.
Omar in Delaware, you're on WIP. What's up, Omar?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Whoa.
Oh, my God.
Omar,
where
you
at? Omar, where you at?
Oh, you know, I'll be having the Bluetooth. I'll be
I thought the phone was on the other side of the room.
That's what it sounded
I'm
like.
Back.
Yeah.
Listen, here's what I got to say.
Okay.
Nick Sirianni this year, it doesn't make me nervous about him. It validates that it's time for him to go.
Come on, man.
Time to go.
And so here, I'm going to give you the reason.
Okay.
And we could debate it like gentlemen.
All right.
Right? So we got a history with this guy. He got hired. And at the end of the first season, they took play calling away from him because he couldn't call plays. And so
that was before the first season was even over with.
A professional play caller, boom. The next year, we hired Brian Johnson. We all know he got involved in the offense. We stumbled. We fell early because he couldn't call plays. Then we hire another professional offensive coordinator. We win the Super Bowl. This year, we hire his buddy from within. You can't tell me his fingerprints is not on that playbook. He can't call plays. So if you fire Petullo, he's going to be the one calling plays unless you bring in another professional offensive coordinator who will then get hired when we win the Super Bowl again.
Can I ask you something, though, Omar?
Sure.
And I would agree 100%. Give Kellen Moore, he certainly has more credentials, more history than Kevin Petullo has, absolutely. But when you were watching the offense last year, did you watch it and said, man, what a complicated offense we had? Or did we just have a once-in-a-lifetime performance from the offensive line and Saquon Barkley, and this whole, you know, call plays, not call plays, was sort of washed over by the fact that they ended up more dominant than we could have ever imagined?
Like, we had a good dominant defense in the playoffs, yep. Turnovers. We had a very, very strong offensive line.
Yep.
But we did the same thing with Stane Steichen. So that's where I would disagree with you, Spike. We did it with another professional play caller, and we should have won that Super Bowl if it wasn't for that phantom holding call. So the only thing that's changed from last year to this year is Mekhi Becton and the offensive coordinator.
Well, but also, Jalen's numbers passing are essentially exactly the same as last year. So I guess to me, the biggest change from this year to last year, if we're just talking about what's happening on the field, we can say the only thing different is Petullo, but the biggest thing different is we can't run the football, and I just can't put it on Petullo. I can't get there. I agree with you. I agree with you with some of your points on Nick. I just don't think that the fact that he hired Petullo is the reason that they can't score this year. I just don't believe it.
You know, if you had a good coach, your coach is going to be able to coach a team better. Coach them up. The offensive line hasn't gotten better. The offense itself hasn't gotten better. We've actually gotten worse. And listen, man, I like Nick as an individual, but he's a glorified cheerleader, and we need to go ahead and get rid of him, bring in a coach, bring in Frank Wright as the offensive coordinator. Frank's not going to go nowhere. And I'm going to actually pin this on Howie, because Howie allowed this to happen, even though he had data from 2023 that when you hire from within, it didn't work.
Hmm. All right, give us your 90s star.
All right, here's my man, Michael Jordan, but not for what he did on the court. Ike, you're like this. He brought in that area of two hoop earrings for men. Listen, I was born in the 60s.
Yeah.
A real man only wears one diamond stud in the left earlobe.
Left earlobe, yeah. Yep.
Them two hoop earrings, man. Fruity Punch, that's all I'm going to say, guys. Have a good one.
All right, Omar.
Fruity Punch.
Yeah, well, no, he was saying, if you wore an earring in your right ear before it became cool.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, right. Wait. Well, first of all.
Yeah.
That was an unnecessary analogy,
yes.
There.
I didn't know if you knew.
No, I knew it. No, okay. Not for you, for him.
For him.
It was unnecessary.
It was unnecessary.
Secondly, I think he's wrong. Jordan was the one hoop guy.
He was eventually two, wasn't he?
Maybe he wore two eventually, but I always thought his signature look was the one hoop. That's what Jalen does, the one hoop.
The person I remember wearing two, the first, was George Michael from Wham.
Oh, yeah.
I remember.
Yeah.
And I was telling Jack this about one point. Yeah. I was like, you know, when we were growing up, you only wore one earring.
No, you're right. And your left ear. Your left ear.
I wonder.
Rodman wore both, didn't he?
Yeah.
Well,
nobody was trying to. Well,
he had a lot of
piercings. Nobody was trying to be like Rodman, but now everybody looks like Rodman.
Right, yes.
Tattoos and piercings
nose
everywhere.
Nose piercings and ear piercings. Yeah.
I didn't see the two earring things until I went to school. College.
That's when you saw
when I saw guys wearing the two earrings.
That's when I, because you know I used to have a bunch.
Yeah.
And that's when I, how many did I end up with? Six? Maybe six? Dude, I had one piercing in here.
Ooh.
On this part.
Oh, man.
Do you know what that part of your ear is called?
No, what is that called?
It is called the tragus.
The tragus.
So I saw my friend Brooke get that piercing.
Mm-hmm.
And the most, this is horrible. I hate saying this.
Yeah.
I heard the crunch as the needle went through the cartilage.
Yeah, cartilage.
Just awful. Mm. Just awful.
Yeah, I got the second one pierced and I was done.
When did they come out?
I took them out when I retired.
Okay.
Yeah, when I retired, I said I was getting in the media. I'm like, you don't need the earrings. Now they wear earrings.
They do.
In the media. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I never did the nose ring, the lip ring, any of that. Yeah, I was out.
I had two in the eyebrow.
Yeah, I haven't worn earrings since 07. Yeah, 07.
Jack was never an earrings guy.
I think the holes may still be open.
They're probably.
Yeah, because I've had them. Dude, you know how I pierced my ear the first time?
So was it an ice cube and a needle?
And a safety pin.
Yeah, there it is.
How stupid is that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, just as dumb.
Yeah, how stupid is that?
People said that was stupid. Dude. I went to the mall with some person who had no idea what they were doing on a gun they used on 600
other people.
At least a safety pin.
Yep.
You probably dipped it in alcohol or something before you did it.
Yeah. And you burn it, you sterilize it, and then you did it. Yeah.
There was no numbing agent at the mall or whatever.
That's
we didn't
true.
Have the
it
ice.
Did it with the gun, right? The ear piercing gun.
The ear piercing gun that would sit. It was Piercing Pagoda in the Granite Run Mall. I'll never forget it. And the gun would sit there all day long. All day long. Yeah. All right.
Yep.
215-592-9494. Has your faith been shaken in Nick Sirianni? Next question today. Give us someone big in the 90s. Today's show sponsored by Klondike Kate's Christmas Sleigh Bar. Check out the pop-up Christmas Sleigh Bar at Klondike Kate's from now through December. Coming up next, the return of Flyers and 50 with Broads. Is he here, Jack? I think I saw him milling around.
Yeah.
All right. I wonder whose job he is aiming for today.
Right. And is he going to defend his quarterback?
Oh, are we going to have a little football discussion with Broads?
I don't know.
All right.
We might have to sabotage it.
Yeah, I have no problem with that, as I've shown in the past. This is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz.
FanDuel, in partnership with Valley Forge Casino, is the number one sportsbook for same-game parlays. From points and rebounds to threes and assists, FanDuel is the best place to combine your favorite picks into a same-game parlay or track every stat live, all in one easy-to-use app. And right now is the perfect time to join, because new customers get $150 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins. So bet on the players that you love the way that you want. Head to FanDuel.com/Ike to sign up today. That's FanDuel, the official sports betting partner of the NBA. FanDuel Sportsbook is the official sportsbook of 94. WIP.